time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Malzahn should release a video of him like riding Space Mountain right now. It's being like, what's going on at Auburn, huh?
With his eyes, Pat Forty.
Even by Auburn standards, it's pretty wild.
Here's Pat and Dan.
Hi, welcome to the pod, and we'd like to give a full pod thank you. Tip of the cap. You are appreciated. You are loved. Hell, I might send a Valentine. Auburn football helping us through the offseason. Never change, Tigers. Never change.
I have a theory. One of the reasons you're not in China is you just knew instinctively that Auburn was going to do something ridiculous, as it does basically like on a scheduled basis here. And so you needed to be home to handle the latest from Auburn.
If chocolate flowers show up at the football offices, it was us, guys. Just to let you know.
That's right.
My work is here. I'm needed here. I can't leave the great people of America at this moment when Auburn is potentially trying to fire its coach or not. Auburn president Gogue?
I don't know whether it's Gogue or Go.
He's out. Know. He's going.
Yes, he is.
Auburn president Jay Going, he's going to, because he's leaving, is, quote, trying to separate fact from fiction inside the football program. I'll tell you what you don't do, Auburn president. Don't file a Freedom of Information Act with your school because they'll never respond.
That's the truth. That's the truth. They aren't going to help anybody from the outside separate fact from fiction there.
I feel better about all my years reporting on Auburn that the damn president can't separate fact from fiction at that place. Whatever they're telling you, Auburn President Jay, going, get out of here. They're lying.
They do not want you to know what's going on there. They don't want anybody to know. That's the Auburn credo. I don't know. You know, somebody needs to put it in Latin for me and put it on one of their buildings. There is none of your business, no matter what the business is.
Yeah, it's like we'd like your the football budget. I remember we were doing like, you know, what you spent on your bowl game. You know, there's like a form you got to fill out to the NCAA. Every single school responds except Auburn. health privacy. Like, no, there's no student health in there. It says you got 3 million, you spent 3.5. Like, what? Is there a different, like, law to, like, Alabama did it? UAB did it? What's going on in Auburn? Like, this is a pretty basic thing. All right, this is wild.
By Auburn standards, it's pretty wild.
They kind of have fired the coach, Brian Harsin, but they haven't fired the coach. They want to fire the coach. They want to fire Brian Harsin.
Some people do. Somebody does.
Somebody. We don't know who runs the place, but it isn't Jay Going. That guy's like, get me out of here. Jay, get me out. President, get me out of here. So look, Auburn starts hot. They do pretty well. I mean, they beat Arkansas at Arkansas. They beat Ole Miss. Right?
They were 6-2 with a close loss at Penn State in a wild atmosphere.
Yep. And a tough loss at Georgia, but whatever. And then the wheels fall off. They lose 5 straight. But like as of like at Halloween into early November, you're going, hey, you know, Brian Harsin won the bad hire. You know, he's a proven coach, got some experience at Boise State. He's going to settle into this thing. First year coaching down the South. And then the wheels come off. They lose at A&M and they lose to Mississippi State, which really shouldn't be a total disaster, but they lost, and then they lose at South Carolina. Then they have Bama beat, and Brian Harsin does a horrible job coaching the end of that game. We were all over him. We had nothing say something nice. We had nothing nice to say about his late game management. Gives Alabama that game. They should have won that game. Then they lose in the Birmingham Bowl to Houston. 17-13. So they end up 6-7. More notably, like 20 players quit. They transfer. Both coordinators transfer, including one who was there 5 weeks. Derek Mason is the defensive coordinator. He leaves for Oklahoma State, which is not, you know, that's a lateral move at best. And he's a highly respected guy in the SEC. The recruiting class isn't good enough. 14th nationally, but I think it's 8th in the SEC.
Signed nobody on the February signing day.
signed nobody, got no top 100 players, I believe. And so, yeah, it's struggle, but now they're looking for ways. They owe Brian Harsin, what, $19 million?
Yeah, they owe a ton because he was brand new because they just paid a ton to make the last coach go away. That was Gus Malzahn. And so between the two of them, if you're firing them both for cause or without cause, I'm sorry, Malzahn was that guy. Then you are looking at $40 million over two seasons for two different coaches, which even by Auburn standards is the definition of lunacy.
That'll buy you every Waffle House from, you know, from Birmingham to Atlanta and back.
Every Waffle House, and one would think a few cover corners and a running back and whatever else you may need to not be 6-7 next year.
The initial investment, the Waffle House has a franchise fee of about $200,000 to $300,000. And then you got to fix the place up and all that. At most, high end, according to this, I'm looking at $1 million.
Do you really have to fix the place up? Is there such a thing as fixing up a Waffle House?
It's got to look like a Waffle House.
Okay. I mean, it's got to still have a slippery floor from the grease and the stools, right? And the big-ass menu that's laminated and the big stove where you scatter, smother, and cover, but you're not creating a steakhouse.
Well, okay. No, you're not. Initial investment up to $1 million. Put that in a rural area, it's going to be less. But let's go high-end. They could have bought 40 Waffle Houses. I know everyone goes, oh, our boosters have the money. Like, what do you people do? You're supposed to be smart and you're paying $40 million to fire two coaches? Yeah. Plus all the staff. That thing's going to go over $40
million. I mean.
And then the lawsuit that's going to come. I mean, it appears they're looking for reason to fire with cause.
Yes.
So they're now in a bit of irony beyond the scope I can't even describe. Auburn is trying to find violations inside its athletic department. Auburn.
Cam Newton University. Yes. Suddenly vigilant, looking out for misdeeds, policy violations, procedural missteps.
They have no chance of firing him with cause unless there is, I don't know what, you're going to have to come up with something pretty good. Right? It's like, well, that Hoover High School football, like they're running drugs through for the cops or something. Yeah. Like, you got to have something good. They never fired any coach that got in trouble with anything, including the basketball coach who they smartly stuck with and has the number one team in America.
Yeah.
I will take the case of Brian Harsin if he gets fired with cause. I'll be just like, okay, exhibit one, basketball. I don't blame him for keeping Bruce Pearl. He's the best coach they've ever had. Keep him. Going great. NCAA's toothless now. Whatever. I don't care. Good. But you can't have Bruce Pearl stick through, hire him after show cause, stick with him through various things, celebrate him, give him a new deal in like 6 hours because Louisville fired their coach.
Yeah.
And then sit there and go, we're not. We got to fire you. Yeah, sorry. Says right here, you said on your expense report, I don't know. All I know is this is hysterical. But at the same time, I kind of get it. He's probably not the guy.
Yeah. I mean, sure.
That's the problem. He's going to get fired next year.
I've already figured out the date when they get rid of him, Dan. If they can't get rid of him for cause here, if the buyout lowers, you know, to a point where it's just not nauseating, they open next year with 5 in a row at home, including Penn State returns the game. They go back down there. They have a chance for a decent start there. But then October is like boom, 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 3 weeks in a row, tough SEC road games. It's like Georgia, Ole Miss, Texas A&M. You lose 3 of those, you got a bye week after the October 15th game. Bang, you get rid of him then. And you bring back Kevin Steele or whoever it is the boosters want. And circle the wagon, circle the eagle around the stadium and go from there. But
so the loss to A&M and Coach Sliced Bread is going to do him in?
Sliced Bread does him. Gets him. Gets guy.
Sliced Bread is lethal, man. I don't think he... Look, here's the thing. He's probably not the guy. But you can't... Like, at this point, you either have to fire him. I mean, there's just no chance.
No,
like
I know.
You are literally saying we're trying to fire him, which is what's going on. What recruit is going to be like, I'm interested in this program? And you say, well, Brian Harsin's not a good enough recruiter. I agree so far. And that is devastating in the SEC, because if you do not get players, you will end up losing. But, I mean, this is the team that has to play Bama and Georgia every year. Them and Tennessee played Bama and Georgia every year. And they also got A&M, LSU on the schedule every year. I mean, it's a tough road. And Auburn does a tremendous job navigating that road most years. You have to have players. And the everyone else is recruiting like gangbusters. I expect LSU. But, I mean, if you sit there and say, all right, look, we think this guy's a good coach. He's going to – we hire him from Boise State, and we know it's going to take a little while to get into the SEC recruiting flow. Like, that had to have been thought of before. And, yeah, that first class wasn't what we wanted. But the way to make sure the second class isn't what you wanted is basically say we're firing you if we can, if we can afford it. Like, this seems even worse. It's like we don't really have the money. We're hoping Suni Lee kicks in because she's got all the dough.
Pass the plate around at the gymnastics arena.
That's right. Pass the plate.
And if there was ever a year just to be quiet and not be all fighting and like causing drama, you have the number one basketball team in the country. You can absolutely win the national championship. Not only are they number one, they're really fun. It is a fun basketball team. And you have the freaking Olympic gold medalist gymnast filling your arena. Like, there's plenty to do. Plenty to do. All the boosters should have been like, all right, we're just going to kick back and enjoy this. We'll let this sort out. We don't need to like cause our typical mayhem right now because we're bored. There's nothing to do around here.
I mean, as is often the case with Auburn, there's a lot of layers here. I mean, there's a lot of palace intrigue, a lot going on. And I do have to say also, so you, real quick, my freedom of information experience with Auburn. This is 2 years ago when I first filed to try to get the notice of allegations from the NCAA. And I was on campus for the SEC Swimming Championship. So I went every day for three straight days to the keepers of the records. The first day, I was like, oh, yeah, we'll look into that. Second day, no. Third day, no. Anyway, continued on. You know, this was the excuse, the cloak was ongoing investigation. This is a private document because it's part of an ongoing investigation. Meanwhile, every other public school and several private schools that were nailed in the FBI case produced their notices of allegations. Auburn didn't even acknowledge having one.
I mean, this is the law.
Yeah, that's the law.
I mean, it's the law. Yeah. Like, and there's a reason fans sometimes get upset about the freedom of information because they want reporters to find like stuff like what's the like you're literally just trying to get the notice of allegations. It's not like you're digging through someone's bank account, right? You just want to know what they were accused of. You want this law, unless you want your city council never having to say what they did today.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you try to keep people from
operating in complete secrecy.
Yeah, your city council will no longer have public meetings. And they'll just hand over the tow truck contract to their buddy for, I mean, like, that's just what every politician wants is no freedom of information.
As White Goodman Absolutely. Said on Dodgeball, the hippies got something right.
Anyway, these are pretty simple requests.
Fast forward to they have their hearing before the NCAA Committee on Infractions. They don't tell anybody they had the hearing. There's no evidence they had the hearing, but they had the hearing, at which time I went back to Auburn and said, okay, this is not an ongoing investigation. The investigation ended months ago. The hearing was on the results of the investigation. Give me the document. No, it's still an ongoing investigation. No, it's not. No, it's not. But they said it was. And so they managed to keep the entire thing quiet through I don't know how many recruiting cycles. The fact that Bruce Pearl was charged with level one violations, schools charged with level one violations, skated on all that just because they didn't feel like they had to tell anybody. So maybe it's genius. Maybe it's genius. Anyway,
I mean,
now.
If I was in charge of Auburn, I'd do the same thing. I'm just saying.
you're not in charge of any higher educational institution.
I'm just saying, like, everyone else complies because it's the law. I got take it up with the law. You got a lot of dumbass laws in Alabama, man. I'm sure you can find one on this. It's a law. You get money, you're public, right? You don't like it, go private.
They just stayed public and stayed quiet. But anyway, so this is history just repeating itself and repeating itself and repeating itself at Auburn. Boosters decide what they want to do and then just go behind whoever the administrators are and try to do what they want to do. And the hell with protocol, policy, chain of command, any of that stuff. This goes back to 2003 when they tried to hire Bobby Petrino while Tommy Tuberville was still the coach. This goes to last year when Gus Malzahn was pushed out. And lo and behold, like immediately, Kevin Steele's going to get the job. Kevin Steele's got everything lined up. He's got the staff. He's got everything. Well, where was you think that was coming from? That was coming from the boosters who wanted Kevin Steele, who helped push out Gus Malzahn. That didn't happen. Alan Green, the athletic director, who is not an Auburn guy, took the job, comes down there, stands up and says, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do our own deal. They do a search. They come up with, oh my God, an outsider, a guy from Boise, Brian Harsin. They bring him in. And then to toot their own horn, they went to AL.com and gave a sourced story on how the investigator, the coaching search went down and how the administration went and got their guy. It was basically like the finger to the boosters. Like, yeah, this is how we did it. Well, lo and behold, Brian Harsin, outsider, never very popular to begin with. 6-2 start. Okay, fine. Tolerated. Things go downhill from there. You can start seeing the wheels turning behind the scenes. Here come the boosters again. Tank Bigsby runs out of bounds for Auburn in the Iron Bowl, giving Alabama just enough time to go down and score and put the game into overtime. Harsin makes a terrible decision not to go for two with his limping quarterback in that game in overtime. They lose. Alabama goes to the playoff. Auburn goes to whatever sorry bowl game they go to. They lose. Recruiting suffers. Assistants leave. Bang. Here we are again. Guess what? Guess what? When the news was being leaked all of a sudden on about Harsin being in trouble. Where do you think it came from? The boosters that didn't want him to begin with. Then again, Sunday night. Oh, he's in his... It could happen anytime now. He's out. Well, Garrett, where do you think that was probably coming from? The boosters. Because today, Auburn's putting out a statement saying no decisions have been made. And we have to put out that statement to shut up the damn boosters who won't quit talking to the media.
Well, that's like how it works at Auburn. We're in favor of this.
Yes, we
not
are.
Not a good way to run your business.
No. But, we're always in favor of talking to the media, but perhaps be accurate. As opposed to just what you wish was happening.
This is the problem with Auburn. And when you talk to coaches, it's like, who are you working for down there? Who's my boss? Right. Like the job one, when you get a job, you want to know who the boss is. And down there, it'd be like 50 guys. And it's probably not the guy that's supposedly the boss. You know, this is what scares like Brent Venables away, right?
Yeah.
I guess Kevin Steele will be the guy if this civil war wins out for the Kevin Steele faction. They basically just waited a year and then got what they wanted. Yeah. Maybe that's the case. But other than that, like you scare away quality candidates when you act this way, because absolutely, it's not that Auburn's not a great place to work and you're going to get tons of money. But there, if you're that level of a candidate at Auburn, you're also going to have a chance to go somewhere else. And so you're Brent Venables. You're like, I don't want Auburn. I'll go to Oklahoma, where no coach has ever left until Lincoln Riley. And it's calm. And as crazy as their boosters are, they get you know, whipped into shape and get
no, you have a strong, entrenched athletic director at Oklahoma.
Right. This is how we do things at Oklahoma. And this is it. And he's got the support. And you're not sitting there saying, you know, we're going to fire Lincoln Riley because they got blown out by Georgia one time. So
Kevin Steele is a match made in heaven, though, with Auburn, because if this does happen, he goes from Maryland to Miami to Auburn in a matter of a month.
Right. And that's not even including his high dollar coffee break at Tennessee.
I did incorrectly state that it was 250. I think it was closer to a million. On the podcast earlier, by the way,
he got paid $750,000 to be the interim coach at Tennessee.
I said without ever actually coaching, it was more $750,000. Yeah,
I'm looking forward to getting know more about Kevin Steele. I do not know him, but this guy is the bell of the ball, huh? I mean,
there's three things to know about Kevin Steele. First of all, the one time he was a head coach, he was at Baylor when Baylor was god awful, and he made the worst single call in the history of college football, where they're beating UNLV in the final seconds. And to make a statement on the 1 yard line, they go for one more touchdown. And the dude fumbles going over the top. And UNLV runs it back all the way to win the game. So there was that.
Wow, and then UNLV won a game. All right.
Yeah. He got fired because, you know, they were terrible. And so then he goes to become the defensive coordinator. And the best thing to be at Auburn is a successful coordinator, because the boosters behind the scenes will say, oh, you're better than the head coach. Let's get rid of the head coach. Let's hire you. And then the third thing is that Kevin Steele has coached everywhere in the last year. It's an impressive, he's gone from Auburn to Tennessee to Maryland to Miami to maybe back to Auburn.
Dude is single and ready to mingle. Don't unpack. Kevin Steele coming through. Have whistle. Will travel. Somewhere, I mean, it's amazing career. Line,
they've decided
absolutely amazing
he is the
career.
Greatest coaching candidate like of all time.
I hope he is. I hope he is. This is going to be good. This is just wild. Like, either fire the guy or don't. But if you're stuck in this limbo, like, if they don't get rid of Brian Harsin, they've gotten rid of Brian. Let's put it this way. They have gotten rid of Brian Harsin. If Alabama treated Nick Saban this way early in his thing, remember he lost to Louisiana Monroe? Yeah. And, you know, now his second recruiting class was really good. And if Harsin had signed the classes, they'd all be happy. But like, there's no coach that can overcome this, I don't think.
No.
Like, sure. I mean, just, it's a total, you're now he in like to take Brian Harsin, I don't want to make him too big of a victim because he's sitting on a $19 million payout or something. Which is like half of which is due in like 30 days. Like Auburn, yeah. I'll give Auburn. They pay their bills.
And they keep paying them and keep paying them and keep paying them.
It was, I appreciate that. There's no like, we'll pay, $112,000 every month for the next like 43 years. It's like, oh, here you go. Cut the check. Get the hell out of here, Gus. Malzahn should release a video of him like riding Space Mountain right now. Just being like, what's going on at Auburn? Huh? I got a fast pass for life down here. Stacks of money.
Orlando
should be throwing
theme park.
Right. Doing like the Aaron Hernandez touchdown dance, like the single, just throwing singles up in the air off some Disney World roller coaster.
Auburn is considering spending up to $40 million to hire a guy whose 4-year record as a head coach is 9-36 and 1-31 in Big 12 play. That's what they're considering. If that ain't Auburn, I don't know what is.
It's amazing because they, I mean, this is a school that undefeated season in the 90s, undefeated season in 2003, wins the national championship in 2010 with Cam Newton.
Yep.
The transfer season. Portal of all transfer portals. Yeah. The Hilton Garden Inn in Starkville. Comes back in 2013, plays for the national title.
Yeah.
And it has immense potential. It's very close to Atlanta. If you don't know the geography, Auburn's, I don't know, what do you think, 2 hours from downtown Atlanta? Not even?
Yep. Two hours from downtown, from the airport, less than that. I mean, it is.
Great access to South Georgia, which has an incredible, though.
Obviously, great access to the panhandle of Florida, North Florida.
Right, they do great. That. And it should. You shouldn't recruit. You should have a better recruiting class. And that's, I'm not here to defend Brian Harsin, but
the Napoleonic complex.
It's hard dealing with Alabama right now, but that's going to change. Like Saban's not going to be there forever. I mean, for how many did Tuberville win in a row? 5 or 6 or 7 or something?
I think it was 5. Five Iron Bowls in a row. That's, of course, they wanted to fire his ass too. Tried behind his back. Sure did.
It's a great place.
I will never forget that one. I was there in 2003 for the Iron Bowl, and they win. Brilliant performance. Win the game, and afterwards, like, the Auburn staff is in the interview room, and a lot of the wives were in there, and they're crying, and you're like, oh, they're so overcome with emotion because they've won the Iron Bowl. No, they knew they were getting fired or sensed that they were getting fired. And it wasn't until later in the week. And actually, I broke the story with Eric Crawford the next week about them having made the secret run to Louisville to try to get Bobby Petrino. But, I mean, that was all going on behind the scenes. It was remarkable.
I mean, they kind of succeed in spite of themselves. But, look, it's a great school. It's a great location. It's got the stadium and the fans are incredible. We've said this over and over. I think it's the most underrated game day atmosphere in the country.
Yeah. It is awesome.
It's really awesome. People always ask me, where in the SEC should I go watch a game? And I'm always like, almost all of them are great.
Yeah.
I mean, you really don't, you know, there's a lot of people that take trips just for the fun of it. But I'm like, Auburn, man, you're there. It's fantastic. Yeah. But it's just like, guys need to, like, just tone down the crazy. You're not helping. That's the thing. Yeah. Like, you're the longer it goes on, the more you fall behind. Right. And that's, I mean, that's the issue. And
that's the thing is you get yourself to a place where, I mean, and maybe Kevin Steele would be the savior, but you get yourself to a place where Kevin Steele becomes the guy you end up with or somebody like him who hadn't been a head coach in 20 years and whose one stint at it was terrible.
They also have to start paying the players. And I mean, they are not a natural NIL. They do not dominate their state. They're the second team in their state and they're in a tiny town. Now, I know a lot of NIL is just a wink and a nod, you know, so it's not the obvious, you know, hey, congratulations, we're the pro football team in Austin, right? There's going to be some opportunities here that that aren't just on the, on the fix.
Let me ask you this, your opinion, gentlemen. Has the Auburn crazy been amped up another level by the fact that now they're both their biggest rivals have now won championships back to back? I mean, I know Alabama drives them crazy, but now Georgia too. I mean, Georgia now has won a title. They're surrounded. They got to play those schools every year. And
look at all their rivals won it. Clemson is sort of a rival, and I think they look at Clemson and go, "What the hell?"
Yeah, like, well, I mean, yeah,
we
could similar,
be, we should be Clemson. They're two
similar
hours
university from profile,
right? Auburn. Similar things. Like, what the hell's this? And then LSU won the other one. So yeah, I mean, it's not a lot of fun since 13, not a lot of fun for Auburn fan around the office. I don't know what they're doing, but I mean, the place has immense potential. Let me say this though. And we've talked about it. This is a little bit of when people say, oh, let's get rid of group of five. As the SEC expands. And if they start playing more games with each other and you bring in two more behemoths, every one of these schools thinks they should be going 11-1. And there's a little thing called math. That does not allow that.
It's a zero-sum game. What some teams go up, that means others must go down.
Yeah, like it's and if you take away a game, if you take away a non-conference game and you add Texas to the thing, you're probably going to, man, you go 50-50 against them, good for you. It just becomes harder. And that's the thing about the NFL. Like they are able to rig it so that Cincinnati Bengals can win two games, four games, Super Bowl. You don't, once you get down, it's hard to get up. And there just isn't that ability. It's these expanded conferences, man. Someone's going to get hit on this. And sure, it'll be different times. But if you're Auburn and you're looking up right now at everybody, and it's amazing because Auburn's a great program, but all of a sudden.
No, to your point, Pat, I think you're right, though. They're hearing footsteps and they're seeing the rivals rankings and see that A&M and Georgia and Alabama are right there at the top. Yeah. And then you don't have to go very far to find OU in Texas.
Like, and Ole Miss has got it popping. Yeah. And Arkansas is winning. And they beat Arkansas and Ole Miss. But, and then what happens? LSU going to be back? And yeah, it is incredibly cutthroat when your expectations are 10-2. Let's put it that way. I think you keep your job if you go 10-2 there.
Yeah,
but Gus Malzahn was not popular at the end.
Nope,
he beat Alabama three times.
Yeah, he's the only guy to beat Nick Saban three times since Nick Saban's been at Alabama, right?
Right. So
still wasn't dicey, good enough.
Tricky times for Auburn, and I don't believe you're going about it the right way. All that said, you're probably going to have to fire Brian Harsin at some point. So
All that said, the pod thanks you for
doing
your civic duty, man.
Yeah,
rip that $40 million Band-Aid.
It's a good thing that there's nothing in Alabama that could use, or anywhere else, could use a couple, charitable donations or anything. Public education system is perfect. All that. Yeah, we don't need it.
Got to get rid of the football coach.
All right. Gets a little juicy up at Michigan. Harbaugh back. We've talked about that. Some of it's been kind of funny. Like Harbaugh didn't get offered the job. Can we just be clear about that? Like, it's this bitch, Harbaugh's coming back. That's like you go ask a supermodel out and she throws a drink in your face. It's like, yeah, you came back. What were you going to do?
Yep. I've been here all along, honey. Right here next to you. Yep.
Yes. I also applied for the Vikings job. Did not get it. I'm back in the podcast, but I am committed to the podcast. However, Josh Gattis, their offensive coordinator, and obviously they had a good deal this year, and he was potentially someone who had a shot at the job if Harbaugh left. We don't know all of the palace drama at this point or the intrigue, but Josh Gattis is out. He leaves and is going to the University of Miami to be the offensive coordinator. Credit to Mario Cristobal, who did the long play looking for his guy. Gattis is a young, pretty highly thought of offense coordinator. Like, that's a good staff pickup for Miami. And on his way out, Gattis texts to his players. Unfortunately, the past few weeks has told a different story to me about the very little appreciation I have here from the administration. In life, I would never advise anyone to be where they are not wanted. So I think he certainly had the possibility of not getting that job if he thought Harbaugh. This is what happened. We talked like how some there's a reaction to the reactions, right? You can't just go interview in the NFL and come back with nothing. Now, I think Harbaugh will get through it, but here's rattle number one. In a vacuum, nature abhors a vacuum, and there was a vacuum in Michigan, and everyone started positioning to see who's getting the job that never opened. And now all of a sudden you're without an offense coordinator, also without their defensive coordinator too, went back to the Baltimore Ravens. So I'm not going to say Michigan's about to crumble because they lost their coordinators. Jim Harbaugh is the coach, but kind of interesting.
Extremely interesting. And to me, I there certainly are no Mensa members on this podcast. Perhaps our listeners may qualify. We do not, but I don't think you have to be a Mensa member to look at that and say, Josh Gattis knew he was not going to get that job if Jim Harbaugh had left. Whether that means Michigan was going to look outside at Luke Fickell or Matt Campbell or PJ Fleck, I don't know, or whether it means Mike Hart had been prioritized inside ahead of him. Mike Hart, a true Michigan man and somebody who's been, you know, I think very valuable to a couple of staffs that have done very well at Indiana and at Michigan. So that seems to be the case, is that he didn't feel like he had a shot at that job. And it is interesting. Gosh, I mean, you would love to know, you know, what were the contingency plans for Ward Manuel there. And obviously Josh Gattis didn't seem to have fit in it. But yeah, look, that's the place where when I was there in October working on the Harbaugh story, it was like fun, man. Everything was fun. Everybody was together. We all love football. And now you're walking out with the offensive coordinator napalming on his way out the door. The defensive coordinator, who was part of the Harbaugh-associated loaner program, is gone. And Jim Harbaugh has to go back and, yes, make up with everybody that he probably would have been ready to walk out on. You don't know for sure, but if he had gone to the Vikings. So some interesting transition and a little bit of fence mending, it seems like, needs to probably happen in Ann Arbor.
You got to work that out and see where it goes to. Like I said, there is work to do at Michigan, but still kind of comical, the whole thing.
How big of a win is that for Miami, though? Tyler Van Dyke was a stud at the end of the year. Like, I feel like that's a really good combo moving forward.
It's good, man. People see, people love Josh Gattis. I think it also shows for Miami fans that they are an attractive, I mean, I don't know, maybe Gattis had to go at this point, but this was the job that was open, but they're going to be, for a long time, Miami relied on the fact that they just had all this talent local, right? They didn't invest in their program. They don't even have an on-campus stadium. They didn't invest in coaches' salaries. They didn't go do the things you need to do. And they just kind of counted on the fact that, you know, they'd just land all these kids from Dade County and Broward County and they'd win. But the game changed. Now, I think you do look at, if you're a Miami fan, like, all right, we're going to have a top staff. Obviously, they've got all sorts of NIL opportunities. They're putting money into this. And Cristobal is not just there to, like he's shooting for the top. You know, they're going to be good. His recruiting was really good for his first class. He had a small class, so they rank high, but their per talent rating is really good. And I would expect they start cleaning up in South Florida.
On a late start, right? So
on a very late start, you know. Yeah. Born and raised in the county of Dade, they want to play for the U. And I think they're going to absolutely clean up next year. And I think it's going to have, as we said, ramifications around the country, because Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State can't just come down there and grab a bunch of really good players. It's going to be harder, if not shut off.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to go somewhere else to find those talent. Or we're going to eat. If you want a little more parity in college football, be a Miami Hurricane fan.
For sure.
Be a USC Trojan fan. Though Lincoln Riley and Mario Cristobal can do more now that we're stuck with the playoff for longer. Like, the rest of us are counting on those programs to stop the flow of just elite, all the elite talent going to a few programs.
Yes. No, it's absolutely it's a new day, new opportunity at Miami. The word used over and over and over by coaches is we want alignment. And it looks like Miami is aligned and very aggressive. Spend a lot of money. They're going to spend a lot of money on staff. They're going to spend a lot of money on NIL. They are going big back after a return to prominence here. And as you said, the recruiting backyard is just there for the taking, as it is for USC and SoCal. And if you take it, you should be absolutely be in the top 10. And, you know, in some years, then you break the top five and you make the playoff. So I think that was a big statement by Cristobal to go get Gattis and, you know, some of the other work that they've done there. And I do think that they are poised to have that kind of alignment that allows them to get back into the high end of college football relatively quickly.
I got a story for you. It hails from Ireland, reading the Irish Mirror.
The Irish Mirror, all right.
Irish Mirror, okay.
We don't have any more mirror papers left in America, do we?
No, no. The Irish Mirror turns the focus right on the Irish, and this is a great one.
Yeah.
This has been multiple movie plots. This is what's great about this. So there was a guy named Peter Doyle, and it's great.
That doesn't sound like an Irish name at all.
This is how Irish it is. It's spelled P-E-A-D-A-R.
Oh, all right.
Right? That is Irish. That's very Gaelic. Peter Doyle, 66, and he has a nephew, Declan Haughey, or Haughey.
Okay.
Or whatever. Another. Very, very Irish. This is the Irish Mirror. So they're in the little town of Carlow, Ireland. One day, Declan shows up with Peter. They bring him into the post office to collect his pension. And he's basically got him slumped over his shoulder. And the people at the post office, I guess this is where you get your pension in Ireland, were a little concerned. So they alerted the authorities and they showed up. And especially when he left and Peter fell down outside and he picked him back up. And it turned out that Peter was dead. Yeah, he was dead. Declan hauled, allegedly, he's disputing this.
Allegedly.
His dead uncle. His uncle dies. He hauls his dead uncle's body to the post office, tries to make him look alive so he can collect his pension check, which obviously would not be payable to a dead man. You know, the pension goes until death. So he's trying to get one more check out of the guy because I don't know if he could come back the next week because there's like rot and stuff.
Yeah, and rigor mortis and
And does not get away with it. His defense, this is the greatest. Declan's defense was he did not realize his uncle was dead.
Set a bender.
Yeah, right? Could have been too much Jameson, you know.
Pat, is it possible to not realize someone's dead?
I mean, there have been entire movie plots based on that, right? Yeah. Weekend at Bernie's and otherwise, you know. But
Waking Ned Divine, I
believe. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
what? Come on, man! You can't. Did he watch the movies and like this might work?
I could just see him flipping through the channels and come on TBS and see a midnight showing of a 1997 movie, Waking Ned Divine, and a light bulb going off. Like, oh,
a very dim bulb going on.
Yeah.
Like, but don't you think this has got to be a plan that was in the works for a while? Like, you're just waiting. Okay. Yeah. Uncle Peter isn't doing too well. So I need to be there when he goes. So I can just grab him right away, throw him in the car, and drag him down to the post office.
They definitely thought this up at the pub together.
Yeah, wait, like, too long. Like, and as you said, the effects become rather obvious. It's harder to play this genius card.
It's only going to last for a week or two. I mean, yeah, you're like, who's buying the next round of pints? And then you're like, we're out. But you know what? My uncle died earlier today, and they owe him that pension.
That's a bar tab.
Let's carry him down to the post.
Let's go get him before they drag him off to the funeral parlor. Let's see if we can put him to work.
Yeah. I would imagine, like, look, let me say this. If I die and I have a pension, which I do not, You could try this if you want.
You'd be fine with this. You'd be fine with being a prop in a scam.
You want to risk it? No risk it, no biscuit, man. You want to risk it with my body? You want to carry me down to where I would be like, if I'm the uncle, I'm like, this is great. I'm now internationally known as the dead guy who had I had a pension. I did my family well.
In Ireland, you got to check a box on your driver's license, like organ donor, and then a pension scam. Like I will be part of a pension scam after death.
This should be great news for your daughters, then, Dan. You know,
just let them know. I don't know. I don't think they listen to the pod, but if they do, if this can work, and you're at my wake, just be like, hey, let's go get one more. There's a whole bunch of bars around here that owe me a round. There's a lot of people that owe me a round.
Go collect.
Uh-huh. Yeah, go collect. Go collect. I bought a lot of rounds of booze in this country.
He's still collect for the race.
Bunch
the
of deadbeats out there owe me a drink. So you can collect. He did an interview with the Irish Mirror. He's very upset that he's been branded a murderer by the local community.
That's a step in the wrong direction.
I hadn't even considered that. That's probably actually the more likely scenario, as opposed to just finding your uncle dead or waiting for your uncle to die. You probably accelerated his demise to then.
Well, that's certainly true. That's it. Yeah. Because I hadn't thought he might have killed him for the pension.
Yeah.
Seems like there's a better way. He says the problem is it's an unfair accusation, but he did previously steal from his aunt. So that's why, I guess, in the town, they don't think much of young Declan. Quote, why would I want to rob my uncle? Why would you want to rob anybody?
Because you already robbed your aunt.
You can't get the money anyway. You're not robbing your uncle. You're robbing whoever gave him a pension. I'm 40 years of age. Yeah, I'm not a child. I'm not a young fella. I don't know what this word is, like a Gaelic word. To walk into Hosey's with a dead man and collect his money. Am I cuckoo? I'm not. First off, when you're trying to answer that, if you have to ask that question, you probably are.
Yeah.
Peter used to be a Shakespearean quoting pigeon racer. He had racing pigeons.
Really?
This guy's okay. A character.
This is getting even better. Shakespeare quoting pigeon racer.
The priest at the funeral. Blanket coverage by the Mirror. Let me just say this. This is an incredible Mirror story.
Yeah. Doing a hell of a job on this.
He interviewed the priest? Like, all right.
Sure. Who is this guy? Who there's a priest on every street corner just about in Ireland anyway. So, you know.
Paul Healy and Alana Kindred. Excellent work, you two. Excellent work. The priest said, trying to find the good in this, said he's excited that many people in the town came out for the funeral because they had gotten so much attention. So it was a well-attended funeral.
Well, good.
I'm sure they passed the hat, too, collection. Yeah. Hey, look at us. More people at church today than we've had in years. We just need more guys to try to pawn off their dead uncle at the post. Not realizing. Come on, Declan. I got another one. One more to end. Unless you got something else to say on that.
No. Okay. Just another criminal mastermind for the pod.
It's a tough week. People are dropping dead. This is also not so good. Hate to make light of a murder, but if you've listened this far into this podcast, you know what you're getting. An Iowa man was sentenced to life behind bars for the murder of a friend. This is in the New York Post. He repeatedly ran over with a pickup truck after a fight about mayonnaise.
Woo! Of course.
Mayonnaise.
We know it's a very contentious...
Certainly. It has caused some contention on the pod, that's for sure.
I hate mayonnaise.
Yep.
Pat likes it.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I'm not, you know, like a wild advocate, but I don't avoid it. And at times I actually do enjoy it.
I would not get so riled up to the state of murder. The waitress accidentally puts the mayonnaise on the sandwich. I'll just eat the, like, I'm not big on harassing the hell out of
the workers, you know, you're not going to cause an indignant scene.
I am an absolute, I will say this. I hope if at the end of, many people hate me, right? And for good reason.
Yeah.
But I hope they always say I punched upwards, right? Like, I always am like, I'm nice to the, I'm not going to kill the poor waitress, right? She forgot. Okay. She's busy. So I have eaten some mayonnaise. I did not kill any waitresses. I'd just like to put that out there, or anybody else. Here's the situation. I deep dove on this. I have the police report. the incident report.
A Wetzel investigation. Here we go.
Okay. It's Erlbach. Let's see. What's his name? Christopher Erlbach. Sounds like a good Hawkeye tight end. Yeah, he's accused of killing Caleb Solberg of Moorhead, Iowa. Sort of like the northwest part of Iowa, up kind of north of Omaha, I believe it is.
Okay.
Kind of, man, it's, yeah, not much going on. Up
there. No.
Sometimes mayonnaise is the biggest incident in town. Okay, so here's the situation. Erlbach and his friend Sean Johnson, not the gymnast, spelled differently, also an Iowa legend. That would have been a weird twist, huh? Olympic gym. Sean Johnson's drinking at the scrap bar in Moorhead, Iowa. Erlbach and his friend Sean Johnson, no relation, were at a bar in Moorhead, Iowa. Also at this bar was Caleb Solberg. All of them were drinking and had ordered some food. For some reason, and boy, what we wish we knew, Erlbach put mayonnaise on Solberg's food. Solberg did not like Erlbacher messing with his food, so he punched Erlbacher. Sean Johnson and Erlbacher decided to leave Moorhead. They went to Dave's old home, Pisgah, I can't pronounce this, Iowa.
Pisgah, probably, yeah.
Iowa. I looked this up, man. Pisgah, Iowa's got like 11 people. Dave's old home is exactly what you think that place would look like in this little town, right? Classic Midwestern little town. Yeah, right? It's terrific. Erlbacher made at least two calls to Solberg's brother to complain about the incident. Erlbacher threatened Solberg and Pryor. Erlbacher threatened to set the house on fire, to shoot Solberg with his Mossberg shotgun, all sorts of stuff. They end up at the same bar. Parks outside, does not enter. It goes on and on. Eventually, he runs them over twice with a car. They were letting people. Okay, so the two guys are in there. They started fighting. Everyone just let them fight outside because it was deemed just another bar fight. Dave's old arm, man. Nobody. Two guys are wailing on each other.
Northwest Iowa justice. Here we go. Yeah.
They got to fight over that mayor. So mayonnaise is not that big of a stretch.
He runs him over dead. Now he's got life in prison. Okay. Is the proper punishment here to make this man eat mayonnaise every day? Or am I just like too involved in the Chinese Olympics?
Yes. Yes and yes, probably. But. I will say it is classic pod here, I guess, that we are debating whether the grisly murderer of somebody should be forced to eat mayonnaise. I would hope life behind bars is part of the punishment. And if you want to add daily intake of mayonnaise to the equation, that would perhaps
be. Is that cruel and unusual punishment? Or do you just sit there and say, look, that's how we serve it at the prison? I mean, you don't get the order off the menu here. You get what you get, a bologna sandwich or whatever, right?
Fortunately, I've never had prison food, but I would imagine mayonnaise would step it up a little bit. So
wouldn't you think?
You probably don't want to waste the money on mayonnaise.
No.
I hate to speak ill of the dead, but why would you throw mayonnaise on a dude's food? Like, what is that? Like, you just got nothing to do? So you're like, I think, you know what? Saw you ordered the club sandwich.
Well, we are missing some key information here. There's no doubt about it. Like, the motive behind
the Irish Mirror to get on this story.
Right. Yeah, much better reporting behind
the unprovoked mayonnaise attack, or whether it was provoked or what.
The newspaper situation in America is not as good as the Irish.
Clearly.
Omaha, get up there. I need an Omaha story on this. Des Moines, Sioux City, Ames Tribune.
Quit
and your water. Drive all the way across.
Talking
the
about your water and get down to the bottom of this story.
What happened at Dave's old home?
But it's, if you think about the number of decades in which mayonnaise was such a benign part of American culture, and now all of a sudden, like we have not just murder, but we have football coaches having buckets of it dumped on them in like this celebrated bowl game moment. This is a boom time for mayonnaise.
Wedge issue now in America, in the heart of America, in the middle of America, where mayonnaise is a bastion of food and culinary delight in Iowa, I would imagine. So this is really, really, if you could sum up America right now, it's just the fact that we're fighting over mayonnaise in the heart of America.
People are losing their lives.
That might be Sully's finest little soliloquy in the podcast.
That was really That's really sweet, Sully.
Yeah. Sully, nice. Sully's cultural commentary on mayonnaise as a wedge issue. There it is.
Dave's old home, good food, and the coldest beer in Harrison County.
Okay.
I want to go to Dave's old home.
I don't know, man.
I'm going to take a pass.
Yeah, I think I might miss that too.
Well, just mind your own business.
Dudes get run over in the parking lot.
There was a fight. The fight happened in Moorhead. Let me see. Looking at the menu here. Easter special, turkey or ham, mashed potatoes and gravy, green bean casserole, and a dinner roll, all for $7.95.
All right. Huh? I might consider showing up.
Starting March 5th, salad bar is back.
Whoa, here we go.
I'm not touching the salad bar in there. Saturday night, Cajun brisket. This is the Valentine's Day special.
No. We're not eating Cajun brisket in Iowa.
They're romantics there at Dave Volholm. They have a Valentine's Day special. Cajun brisket, prime rib, ribeye, smoked pork chop, fantail shrimp. All served with the baked potato, garlic toast, side salad, and dessert. Only from 5 to 9. I don't know. It doesn't say.
That's because they're jacking that one up. That's going to be more expensive.
It's Valentine's Day. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But we're not eating shrimp and we're not eating Cajun in Iowa, in that part, in Moorhead, Iowa, where we're talking. Okay. Those are off.
Careful with your mayonnaise, people. Take one lesson here. Don't be an Auburn booster and careful with the mayo and don't take your dead uncle down to the pension line.
There, you know what? Rules to live by. We have provided people a lot of
solving problems around here. Solving problems. We will be back later this week. We'll do some Super Bowl talk. We usually do stories of Super Bowl players. Remember that?
Yep.
Maybe we'll do that. Or who knows what the hell happened.
Yeah, we still got more Auburn saga to go.
Yeah. We'll milk this for a while. Appreciate y'all listening, especially into the off season. Please continue to get people to listen. We need you.
Get your dead uncle to listen.
Your uncle is dying. Don't get the pension, but totally hit auto resubscribe onto his phone. And then bury it. And then, hopefully they'll go. We need everything we can get. Send us thank you for everything. And we will talk to you later.